Every single day, people take unwanted or unused items to thrift and antique stores across the country. But as the saying goes, one man's trash is another man's treasure, and we're here to prove it. Identify valuable things before you throw them away. Join us as we show and tell of treasures found and sold by a full-time reseller with the hopes of helping you find some treasures of your own. Welcome to the What's Sold podcast.
Welcome back to the What's Sold podcast. My name is Brandon. I am here with my good friend Matt Brock, otherwise known as Rusty the Reseller. He is not a reseller. Mm-hmm. He is an aftermarket or secondary market merchant. That is what we.
That's right.
This is what we like to say. What Matt is
trying to flip the script here. Change the narrative.
Yeah, well, what you're doing is you're making the role sexy. That's what you're doing. You're making it interesting.
Right.
You're making it debonair. It reseller just sounds like, you know, so banal. But when you throw in secondary market merchant, wow, you're like the James Bond of the selling world.
Oh man, that's that's awesome.
You are the James Bond of the selling world.
Yeah. It gives it some sex appeal,
which I
desperately need.
Absolutely. So if you if we get a picture of you playing Baccarat at some fancy casino, then we'll know that we are on to something here.
Anyway,
how has your week been so far? I know you've got spring break and kids and stuff going on. And before we go into that, before you go into your week, it's interesting because this show is about helping people who are trying to be resellers or secondary market merchants themselves. A lot of the people I'm assuming are probably doing this as a part-time side hustle. I would assume that probably not a ton of them are like you, where they're fully invested all the way through. But when you are sort of in the midst of all this and you've got kids home from school and you've got all this stuff, I mean, how do you deal with that as a professional? What do you do to keep your business on track?
Oh, you know, well, I'll say what I'll do, but if anybody has if the answer is out there, please let me know the best way to do it. It's a double-edged sword, right? The idea, having this job and doing it full-time does afford me, if I'm able to make enough to pay my bills, right? It also affords me some flexibility with my time. If I want to go out and get lunch and sit on my laptop and do some work in the middle of the day, great. Like, I can do that. No one's going to say I can't. I can work from any location. When my kids are sick, when there's a day out of school, I can be home with them. So it sounds great, like, oh, that's awesome. Until the day comes, or the week, like spring break, which is this week, and then it actually happens. And then I'm home with two children, and I'm not getting anything done because I'm just watching the kids. And it's good. I want to be dad. I want them to remember that they had this time with dad when they get older. And I want to enjoy the time with them also, but it's hard too because there's this pull. There's a business still happening. There are sales still happening. There's things I need to list that I can't. I don't have time. The only option is to do it late at night, which takes more time. And then I'm pulling that time away from my spouse. So it's not ideal. Or I do something on the weekends, which I always try to keep the weekends for the family. So I guess I would say that just like knowing that there are going to be down months, you know, certain months are going to be lower than others. You need to also account for if I'm going to take time off or there's time I got to spend with my family like this, then I need to be saving money back or I need to be making moves to try to prepare myself for those times knowing that I'm not going to. It's the same thing if I go on vacation for a week. I try to disassociate myself as much as I can just to be present with the family. But it's not easy. It's not easy. I know I'm not going to feel it today. Like I'm making sales today that from work I did 6 months ago. And sometime from between today and who knows how long in the future, I'm going to have a rough week and be like, man, what's going on? It's because I didn't work 6 months ago for that 1 week, right? I didn't get that stuff in the store. It's delayed. Like whenever people with typical W-2 jobs take their vacation, maybe they only get 2 weeks vacation, which is not very much.
Right.
But when they're taking that vacation, they don't have to think about work for the most part because it's built into their compensation that they can have some time where they don't work and they still get paid for it. And they can sit back and enjoy not working and being paid. I can never do that because any day I'm not working, I am not getting paid for that time I'm taking away. And that's the same for anybody who has their own job, right? They work for themselves. There's no insurance. There's no, like, I'm not making money if I'm not working.
Right.
So you can take time off provided you've made enough to set back to give you that option to do that if you can afford to do that. I'm far enough in my business now that I can take a week I could take a month if I needed to and probably live off of the sales and not work, but that would put me behind if I do that. So
right.
All that to say, I try to fit little things in here. I'll take pictures on my phone. I'll do stuff. I'm taking my daughter to an orthodontist appointment this afternoon. I'm going to be sitting there for an hour and a half getting them old braces. so fun.
Is she really getting braces already? Wow.
She's getting some small braces on some teeth, and then she's getting an expander to make her palate yeah. larger. But point is,
the joys of parenthood, buddy. Joys of parenthood.
Oh yeah. So I'm going to be sitting there, my son's going to be watching TV, and I'm going to be listing postcards and other things that I photographed. So I'm not going to just sit there twiddling my thumbs. Like, I'm going to find ways to squeeze some work in. And I guess that's kind of what I do. I try to squeeze it in whenever I can.
Yeah, and it's a little bit like anybody that owns their own business, anybody that does their own thing runs into this kind of issue. I always look at every day is, I say 20% of my day is spent booking. I bank stuff, so 20%. So if I work a whole week, I basically book a whole day during the five-day week so that if I want to take a vacation or if I want to do something, I'm not stressed out. Oh my gosh, how am I going to get all this done? I just built it into my schedule. I was reading this interesting thing about chocolate, cocoa, and apparently there's this worldwide shortage of cocoa, and it's super expensive. But because most of the world's chocolate has been purchased 2 years in advance, we're not feeling it right now. But 2 years from now, at Easter time, people are going to really feel how expensive chocolate's gotten.
That's a great story, because what you're describing does kind of fit into what I do, because if I know there's going to be a shortage, like Tabasco, was it Tabasco sauce or whatever it was that there was a big shortage, like the peppers, there was like crop issues. And
right.
So,
Sriracha, I remember got affected.
The hot sauce, Sriracha, it was Sriracha. And it was like, all of a sudden, people are selling little bottles of Sriracha for $50 a piece on eBay. Partly because that word just got out and people didn't really fully do their research or search. Like, oh no, I got to get my Sriracha.
Right.
So if I know that in 2 years from now, people are going to be like, where's my chocolate? Maybe, I'm not saying definitely, but it warrants more research, because if I can get some good deals on some of that stuff in anticipation of something happening. I mean, it's just like the antique world. Things peak typically in interest about 100 years from the time period that it originated.
Oh,
so
really?
Yeah. So like, art deco stuff and kind of the mid-century, like that stuff, like 1920s, we're in the 2024. 1920s stuff is at its peak right now. Next is going to come the 1930s, whatever the 1930s was known for, architecturally or maybe clothing-wise or things. That's what happens. It's usually that century mark is a peak. So if I know I'm going to be doing this in 10 years, 20 years, and I come across really good deal, if I'm willing and able to float money for a decade, which most people aren't, but if I, you pull that stuff in, or you're already looking 4, 5, 10 years ahead of time, you can get that stuff, you will maximize. But it only makes sense if the price you're putting in is low enough. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that about the 100-year mark, but that's a good, I mean, that's sort of high level, sophisticated secondary market merchant stuff going on there, Matt. That's economics of it. But to be fair, if people are in the business of antiquing and they're out there and they know that this is from the 1930s and they have a storage unit or a garage or something, they're like, you know what? I'm going to pick this up. It's $25, but I know that in 10 years, it's going to be worth $300.
Oh, sure.
Then they might do the math and say, hey, it's worth it. I'm going to say, I'm not basically collecting and I'm not hoarding. That's just good business practice.
Well, and
basically, it's
like, it makes me think of the real estate market, right? There are these cities across the country, and there's a term for them, I believe. I can't remember what it is, but the real estate world has these specific cities that are sort of like a litmus test or a market identify. What am I trying to say? They are a little bit prophetic in the sense that whatever happens in these areas is a very large indication of what's going to happen across the board in the country.
Uh-huh.
And so they'll watch these and they see the trends and they try to make adjustments before it hits their area. So it's the same thing with fashion and all these things. I imagine there are certain magazines, there may be certain things out there or certain companies, I'm just talking about fashion now, for example, or even furniture.
Right.
If they unveil a thing, you could probably tell based on what they're doing, what they're showcasing, what's going to be popular over the next year or two. So with mid-century modern furniture, that stuff is selling at a premium right now. 5 years ago, it was not selling at the premium it is today. So I don't know what it was that triggered that trend, But it is a trend. It's a fad because it's going to move on to something else.
Sure.
But if you saw that and were like, I've got this table, I got these chairs, I got this stuff, and you've got it, and you're like, I just need to wait. It's coming. You know, don't sell that at a cheap price because it's coming. I mean, if I really wanted to take a deep dive, you know, down the rabbit hole, I could do some research and probably find some of those markers, some of those things to watch. But the deal is, I'm not selling that kind. I'm not selling large items. I'm not really chasing after fashion trends or design trends. I'm more selling small items. And that's kind of my world because it makes sense for my business, what I'm trying to do right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, think about what Warren Buffett said. He said, I never make money in a booming economy. I only make money in a down economy. And it's because he's basically the same basic logic is he's like, hey, I'm going to wait until this is lost its value. I'm going to buy it at a low point. I'm going to sell it at a high point. That's
sure.
That's basic business. So for anybody that's out there selling, you ultimately want to find things and anticipate what is going to, it's interesting to me to think about people like, oh, I'm getting in on this fad right now. I'm like, well, that fad's already passed. Anybody that was going to make money on it's already gone. You need to go find the next one. And that's what makes great business people is they're able to anticipate that. But enough of the business economics of the day, Matt, and your children and their braces. Let's get talking about reselling. What are we talking about today? I honestly have no idea what we're talking about today. Matt's been so busy, we haven't even had a pre-production on this. So what do we got?
So I'm going to show you one item that sold, and then I'm going to get into the topic of the day. And today's episode is going to be on vintage cameras.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So here, this is not a camera, but I'm going to show you an item. I'm going to pull it up here so I can show it and discuss it.
And by the way, while Matt's doing that, we have finally figured it out. We are going to be launching pictures in two different places, but starting today, we are going to be loading. We have a Facebook page, a What's Old Facebook page. We don't have stock in Facebook. We don't really care, but we do want to be able to let you guys see these pictures, and we've been wrestling with how to get that out there. We are going to be loading these pictures up onto Facebook. I will put the link into the show notes themselves so you can go find it. You can just type in the What's Old Podcast on Facebook and you'll find it. But it will give you the pictures for the shows that we've done. It's going to take me a little bit to get those up. But just be aware that that's where it's going to be for now. And we'll keep you posted on all that stuff.
Exactly. Perfect. So this sold this just a couple days ago. It's a Waterford brand picture frame.
I recognize that.
Yeah. That's exactly why I'm showing it.
Nice.
You know who this belonged to, don't you, Brandon?
I believe it belonged to my wife.
Yeah, those are your guys'.
She kept asking me about this thing. Yep. She's like, hey, has Matt sold that picture frame?
It was ironic because right after you asked me about it, it sold like 2 days later. But here it is. It's a glass frame, picture frame, very beautiful, by the Waterford Crystal brand. It just sort of sits, kind of rests like this. I think it holds a 5x7. Sold for $75. Wish it had been more, but there it is. I had it higher.
Oh, $75 is a lot better than
sharp stick. Well, and it's better than sitting in the box.
I mean, that thing has been sitting around. Yeah, it's been in our house. I don't even know where we got that.
It's
and we're not pinkies out
a
enough.
Or something.
I feel like that would be something someone would put on a piano with a bunch of family photos on a grand piano. So we're not the grand piano folks. So that is great.
Not everyone can be. You know, that kind of requires a lot of space, the grand piano situation.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let me get into some cameras. Before I start showing you anything, what's your experience with cameras? Did you ever have a phase where you did a lot of photography? Were you interested in that kind of thing?
Well, interestingly enough, I was in an eighth grade photography class, but my dad was a huge camera guy. My dad was a huge, he had thousands and thousands and thousands of black and white and whatever. He really got into it. I remember he had a Pentax camera and he had one of these old fashioned box cameras. And so he was really into it. In fact, if he was still alive today, he would be listening to the show, probably arguing with you, Matt, about what is and what isn't really worth it. But yeah, no. So I cursorily have experience with cameras to answer your question.
Okay. I buy and sell a decent amount of these. I usually find them pretty cheaply at thrift stores. Oftentimes they come without a charger. Oftentimes they come without batteries. And so it can be difficult at times to test a thing because it comes with a very specific size or type, and if you don't have it, you can't say it. So I'll still list it, and I'll just say missing battery, requires battery, needs a charger, something like that. But the ones I'm going to show you today are more like antique cameras, and these would be considered, like, these are handheld cameras. It's really cool looking. The one I'm going to show you first, I would say it's probably around 10 inches long, about 6 inches wide. And this can fold up into itself. It has bellows, like you would think of, like an accordion or something like that. It's made of leather, these bellows. This is in really good condition. They aren't torn. This is by the Kodak company, and this is a really important camera because it's a Model 2, I believe. And these were the cameras that people started taking photographs with at their home, in which that they could then send that photograph off and had a postcard made from that, because the dimensions of the inside of this is exactly the dimensions of a standard postcard. So prior to that, people would take photographs and just have photographs made, but Kodak put this out, I think it was in 1907, something like that. It was in the early 1900s, before pre-1910, and people could now take photographs and then they would send them and have them put on postcards that they can then send to their friends and family. So it's a really cool piece. I just think that they look really cool, like as far as if you wanted to just display this on a bookshelf or if you want to do something like that. It's really cool. It folds in. People would carry it around. They would just literally hold it like this and click the button to allow light in. But these are things that you can find regularly. They are antique, but they're not necessarily rare because there are a lot available. But I'll tell you, the best I do with these is I'll buy them for like $20 or $30 on eBay, and then I'll put them in the antique store I sell at locally and sell them for $60 or $70. And part of that is because that's in Asheville, North Carolina, which is a heavily, like a very touristy town. People travel here for a variety of reasons. But people who like to go to antique stores and thrift stores when they're on vacation are the kind of people who typically want to buy a mm-hmm. gift for a family member or a keepsake from their trip. And so I would say the number one type of things that sell in the Asheville area are things that have to do with Asheville. Old things that were made in Asheville, or if it's a postcard of a location or a building, the Biltmore Estate right. or something like that, those things sell really well because they want a keepsake that reminds them of that trip. But even if it's not related to the area, something that's old, people are prepared and ready to spend money on a vacation because they justify it. It's an expense they wouldn't normally make, but they're like, well, you know, I'm on vacation. This is fun. Like, I want this thing, and I'm just going to chalk it up to money we've already saved for this vacation. So that's sort of like a little bit of a different window into people's buying behaviors. But certainly when people are on vacations and they come to thrift stores, they want to, or antique stores, they want to buy stuff more often than their normal purchasing behaviors. They make different decisions. Here's another one I'm going to show as well. This is similar. It's a little bit smaller. This is a number one. So I have a number two. This is number one. And the next one is a little bit different, but same idea, small billows. This is something, again, I picked up at an estate sale for about $15. It hasn't sold yet, but when it does, it's going to be in that $60 to $70 range.
And it closes up, right? I mean, that's why it has the bellows.
It does. Yeah. Yes, exactly. In fact, if I fold it like that, this will fold up Ooh. Into itself like this.
Oh,
and so
that.
I can hold it. Again, this is maybe more like 7 inches long and about 4 inches wide. But it does. It folds out like this. It slides out on itself, and it can stand wow. up on its own as well. So it has this little piece below that hangs out. It says Kodak on it, and it can just sit. And that's why these are fun. Old radios, old cameras. These are types of things. Now, I was talking about how I don't follow design, but for people who stage areas or knickknacks, if you want something to kind of make your bookshelf a little bit more interesting, stuff like this is awesome.
Right.
Because it's a nod to old technology.
Does that camera still work, though?
I'm sure that it would. Yeah, it still works. Now, you'd need to get the correct type of film. Now, are they still making this format size of film? I don't know. You know, I would need to do some research on it.
Well, Eastman Kodak's no longer a business. They're still incorporated, but they're not actually a operating company anymore.
Correct. But they didn't just fold up like some other, you know, company purchased them and still manufactures a lot of the stuff, because they're still one of the leading
right.
like, brands of, you know, of camera equipment and things like that. Nikon, Canon, things like that. So
you may not know the answer to this, Matt, but I'm curious for people, because there's obviously the people that want, which is probably the majority of people who want this cool keepsake. And I look at that, I'm like, ooh, that would look really cool on my cabinet. It's just a right. cool looking thing. But for people that are actual photographers, do they hunt, like, I can't believe you bought a mandolin from 1920. To me, I'm like, what?
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're into music and into it, do people that love photography, do they want to search out these kind of cameras?
The ones I'm showing today, I mean, maybe, but probably more just for aesthetics. These are probably not the type that they want functionally. However, there are some very, very old cameras that bring really good values. We're talking more what they would describe as large format or medium format. So it is exactly what it sounds like. Medium format is a bit larger of a size that the image will be put on. Like a medium format would be like a 4x4. Like the picture would be 4x4. And there are some awesome cameras that are old. I mean, from the early 1900s, even in the 1800s, still operate.
Okay.
You can still buy that film. It's like black and white typically. And in fact, I bought as a gift for a friend maybe 2 months ago. It's called a Rolleiflex brand. And it's like a German brand, medium format. It's a beautiful camera. And he got it, and he's like, you're going to be the first one to see the pictures that I make. So he's been sending me, texting me some of these pictures, images that he took with him. It's awesome. But yes, and some of those can, if they're obscure or a little bit rare, can sell for thousands of dollars.
Wow.
And then large format ones are ones that would have sat like on a tripod where you have, it's all set up to where, in some cases, all you're doing is holding the lens cap over the lens, and you're just taking it off, allowing light in for a certain amount of time and putting it back on. And that's it. And the rest is done inside of a dark room with chemicals and stuff. But you can do that on different types of metal. You use like colloidal silver and different things to try to, in the dark room, to kind of make that out. But yeah, there's, I mean, again, it's sort of like vinyl records. Mm-hmm. It's like stamp collecting, that you can do a deep dive on certain manufacturers of the lenses themselves. You want like a Zeiss, or you want a something like that.
I'm only asking that question because you're sort of a generalist in terms of what you sell. You have certain things, jewelry, that you really like to sell. But for those mm-hmm. people that are listening, you may be a generalist too. You may be looking for the deal that you want to pass on. But if you're a person that is like really interested in photography or something, you might make this a full business of mm-hmm. finding these. You can create that as a business as well.
Oh, absolutely. You could. You could, and I would say it would be, if you know enough about it, if you care enough about it to research and really kind of know the products, the brands, the time periods, you can, if you could do what I can do with regard to, say, jewelry or instruments, where you can look at a thing and say, I know that this piece has been replaced, or I can see that there's damage or heavy wear here, or I can tell that there's going to be a speck or some dust or some mold in this lens on the inside. You know, if you can do that, you could do very well, because like I mentioned before, I find cameras all the time for very, very cheap, old ones, new ones, and they still sell. People are buying these cameras all the time, a variety of brands, variety of shapes and sizes and formats. And sometimes people just want the battery, right? Like they mm-hmm. got a camera and they don't have the battery, they need a new battery, or they need just the, there's people who have whole businesses and all they do is go to Goodwills and they just, have you seen the little metal like baskets, and all it is just like wires and extension cords and like chargers?
Yeah.
That's all they do. They'll like buy all of that for like $10, and then they just research the information, the model number on this charger, and they put it on. And they're just kind of in that market of people who need components or replacement parts for electronic equipment, and that's all they do. And you can do that. I mean, that's a thing.
Absolutely. I mean, I think most of us, I was just thinking, there was, right before mobile phones became so ubiquitous, there was a camera called the Pixie.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, they had a 240 and then it went to 1,000. I remember it was like huge. It was awesome. It was a digital camera when you bought cameras for themselves. Now, I don't know too many people that buy cameras just for cameras anymore, because we all have them on our mm-hmm. phones and they're amazing. Like if you have an Apple iPhone, I mean, the picture quality is unbelievable. But I have this Pixie and it would be really fun to pull out this digital camera. But guess what? The battery's bad. So I would have to find that component. Mm-hmm. And if you were in that world where you're like, hey, I'm going to go around and find these, and I know that's a Pixie battery and it still works, or I'm going to buy that camera and swap out those components. And people, I mean, probably the most common thing people could think of is like a junkyard, right? Where old cars are, and you need to get a carburetor for your 1974 Chevelle.
Sure.
You go to that junkyard, right? Because nobody's really selling that. You're going to have to pull it. So same basic idea.
Well, and they've got that. It's called Instax, I think, maybe, or something like that. It's like a Polaroid. It's like a variation or like a derivation of a Polaroid. And Polaroid, by the way, way ahead of its time. Incredible. Like the idea, it's like instant gratification. You take this picture and you get this thing, it pulls out immediately.
Right.
We talk about foreshadowing of where we at. I feel like everything around us is that now. We have very little patience for things. But they sell those brand new cameras now that you have the film and you snap that shot and you pull it out. I did. I got one a couple of years ago. Took some pictures. I look at it now. They look like they're 50 years old. Like they've faded.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. And that, but that's kind of cool. You're talking on one of the, you know, last episodes or whatever about hearing that crackle of in the vinyl, like putting on a vinyl record and hearing that sound. It's like you're stepping through a time portal.
Yeah.
Then you have to hear that noise. Like that's a part of it. And it's the thing. Same thing with these. Like you look at these photographs and it's a moment in time. That's why I love photo booths. I have a photo booth. I use it. It's because there's no editing with that. What you take in that photo is what you get. You don't get to dress it up. It's a moment in time, and you know it's a hard copy. It drops out, and this is what you got. This is what you looked like in that moment. If you were turning, you're going to be blurry. You know, were you holding still? And that's why I like it. That's why these cameras are so cool to me as well, because they are a piece of the evolution of photography. Just like a photo booth was the first time people could take. It was the first selfie. You push a button, and a camera pointed at you takes a picture. And that was the first time somebody took a photo of themselves. And that was in the late 1920s, 28, 29, when they were out for the public to use. But this last one I'm going to show, and we'll put this up too, same type as the ones we were talking about before, has the bellows, all this, except that the design in the front is very Art Deco looking. And so I think it's really cool. It makes me think of the jazz age, the 20s, the Great Gatsby, if you imagine kind of all of that.
Oh, yeah.
Really cool. This is the Kodak, the 6-16. So Jiffy Kodak, again, this would fold into itself like this, just like that, right up in, and actually I need to shut that part. It closes in on itself. I have to hold the button here.
Do you know at that time, I mean, did you do the research on this to how much they were selling for when they first came out? Were these super high expensive items or were they meant for public consumption?
These were like, great question. I mean, they were not cheap at the time because like in the 1920s, these things would have been probably $8 to $10, maybe in the teens, which back then, it's like you can't get a cheeseburger for that now at a fast food joint. But back then, yeah, it was like these were nice and everyone wanted one once they saw that they could take pictures on their own. Oh my goodness. You mean I don't have to go into a studio when that person happens to be rolling through town?
Right.
I can do this on my own now. So it
you
was really cool.
You didn't need the silver plates or any of that stuff to do it.
Yep. Yeah. You send it off and they could make, you know, like I said, they could make postcards out of it, which is cool. They could save some. They could send it. That became maybe like a kind of like we think of Christmas cards or New Year's cards where you take a photo of your whole family and you send it off like they were doing that and then sending it. That was a primary form of communication back then. It was just mailing letters, writing notes.
Yeah. So being able to show a picture to somebody that was, you know, that was a long way away and send it in a envelope was pretty amazing.
Sure.
Like you had said it earlier, like we're all just used to things being done automatically. I'd send off a digital image. That time period of taking pictures, getting them processed and produced lasted a long time, technologically speaking.
For sure.
We're really talking up until the early aughts. So it's just kind of a crazy cool piece of technology and history in that time period.
Yes. So I guess all of this today, I just want to show some of these. I have them. I haven't sold them yet, but I have sold many like them. And if you're interested in cameras, there is a large market out there. And you can oftentimes find cameras in most thrift stores or places in your community, wherever you are. There are some of these. If you go to an antique store, there are probably some old ones. And listen, I like to source cameras specifically on eBay because, again, people will get these to use, but a lot of people want them just for aesthetics around their house. And guess what? They don't have to work properly if that's who your buyer is wanting. So if you think a person's going to pay you $40 for something that doesn't work because they want it as a staging piece or something in their house or for aesthetics, then you can buy that for $10 because that person knows it doesn't work and you can turn around and flip it. I source things on eBay, turn around and sell them on eBay and make money all the time. It seems weird. Like why would a person pay more if they could have bought that same one you bought from the same platform? All I can say is it's a weird world out there, but it works.
Well, but that's the whole reason why we're doing this show.
Exactly.
I mean, there are some people that are going to want to put in the work and the hustle and the effort, and there are those that just want to consume it, and that's fine. It's a symbiotic relationship between those two types of people. So
it's true.
It's all good. Well, what do we have anything else today, Matt?
I'm going to show you two pictures real fast that go along with this that I have that I just thought was relevant and cool. First off is an actual photograph of one of these. It's kind of glaring, but it's of one of these cameras. This is a Model 2. This was probably taken in the early teens. And this photograph, I believe, was made as an advertisement piece by the company that manufactured it to show, like if a person, like a vacuum cleaner salesman or a camera, had camera salesman, they would walk around mm-hmm. with these briefcases, mm-hmm. these suitcases, holding some examples, and they would have these photographs. So this is a photo taken of a camera, which makes photos. It's a little meta, but I think it's cool, black and white photograph. And the next one is a real photo post. I'm going to take it out of this plastic so you can see it. It's a real photo postcard, the type of postcard that would have been made from the very first camera I discussed. And it's a photograph of a man standing with a tripod with a camera like this, taking a photograph. So this is, again, probably in the teens. And you can see that these were set up to screw onto like a wooden tripod. And he has some sort of a flash apparatus on top of that as well. But this is just, you know, he's dressed up in like a suit. I don't know, again, if this was made as a way of advertising. Like, hey, look, you. This is what it looks like. This is how, like, a person demonstrating the use of it. But I think it's really cool. It's a unique view. I've never seen one like this before. I can't quite tell, looking at it from the side, exactly which model it is. But it looks to be like a medium or a large format because it's got a deep box. So there's more space back in the box portion that would have held the plate, most likely, that the photo was taken on. But these are really cool. These have value as well. These, both of these, probably could get $20 to $30, maybe more, from those if I sold them.
Really?
Yeah, just the photographs, because wow, it's a very specific niche view that you're looking at.
People, you got to get out there and start looking for these old photos. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I mean, $30 for a photo that you probably got at a, you know, thrift store or something.
You can get these 25 cents. You can get these 50 cents in baskets out at antique stores and thrift stores sometimes. Find cool things all the time with regard to these.
That is awesome. Well, that is exactly why we're here. So hopefully people will take us up on that. But Matt, thank you for that. We'll be back soon, very soon, with another show. Remember to look for that Facebook link. Remember to follow, like, subscribe, all those fun things. We really appreciate you guys following us. It's crazy how fast the audience is growing. I guess there's a lot of people out there that want to sell stuff, so that's pretty cool. But anyway, thank you, Matt. Any last words?
Great. No, it's good luck. Cameras. Keep a lookout.
Keep a lookout for the cameras. All right, take care.